The next case on the court's docket is Bangalore versus Real Party and Interest, Felicia Williams et al., cases 65877 and 66353. Are you ready to go, Mr. Whitehead?
Yeah, I am.
All right.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Michael Navratil. I'm representing Dr. Wong in the consolidated.
Gotcha.
If I may, could we reserve 3 minutes of rebuttal time?
Yes.
The issue before the court on this petition for writ is, can a doctor be liable in tort for providing care to a patient where there's no expert witness testimony presented that the doctor fell below the standard of care or improperly treated the patient without consent? The answer under Nevada law is clear, and the answer is no. The issue of whether expert witness testimony is required in a case involving treatment without consent has been before this court on many occasions. Bronicki versus Rutherford, Brown versus Capanna, Smith versus Cotter, Beatty versus Thomas. All of these decisions follow NRS 41A100 and 41A071 that require expert witness testimony to state to a reasonable degree of medical probability the doctor did something wrong in caring for the patient, including the issue of consent. Ms. Williams has no expert witness supporting her claims that Dr. Wong did anything wrong in this case, and the district court should have dismissed the case. Ms. Williams' claim is that because she's claiming medical battery, she doesn't need an expert witness, and that's not consistent with Nevada law. In Smith versus Cotter, the court specifically addressed this issue and said, liability for failure to obtain informed consent is grounded in negligence, in the sense that it is negligent for a doctor to fail to inform patients of certain risks. That's exactly the situation we have here. The allegation is an alleged breach of duty by the physician. It's not an intentional tort. It's not a battery. It's not a punch to the patient. He provided medical care to this patient. The allegation is that he did not do enough to secure her consent, but that's still an issue that requires expert witness testimony under Nevada law. Our expert, Dr. John Levin, who is a board-certified emergency room physician, has testified and offered an expert report that Dr. Wang, that the patient was properly consented for the treatment. Now, under Nevada law, this wasn't the care took place in the emergency room. So even pursuant to NRS 449710, consent is not even required in the emergency room for an emergency physician providing care to a patient. And there's valid reasons for that. We don't want emergency room doctors who may have 10 seconds with a patient to find out what's wrong with them, find out what's going on. We don't want them to stop and say, do you really want me to treat you? Are you sure you want me to treat you? We want them focused on the medical care. We want them focused on the patient. And we want them to act quickly in emergent situations. It's also fair to the emergency room physicians that they have a right to presume that a patient who comes to their emergency room wants to be treated and wants to receive medical care. Our expert has offered an expert opinion that the patient did give implied consent in this case, and they have no expert testimony to refute that opinion. This court in Bronicki brought this issue up too and mentioned that doctors do not need express consent for every test or touch that they perform on a patient. Consent is oftentimes implied, and most of the time it is implied. Here in this situation, we have Dr. Wong, who's an emergency room physician, practicing in the emergency room. Ms. Williams comes to his emergency room. He's told that she's staring off into space. She has a history of seizures that took place at work. She has a neurologist that she's seeing on a regular basis. Dr. Wong does what we want him to do, which is to evaluate Ms. Williams, make sure she's cared for, make sure any potentially life-threatening conditions are ruled out. Ms. Williams doesn't refuse his care. She never says anything to him, I don't want you to treat me, I'm here against my will, the hospital's making me come here. She never says any of those things to Dr. Wong. In fact, she participates in the care. She answers his questions. She walks down to the radiology to have the CT scan done. She allows the nurse at the hospital to draw blood for the blood test. And she follows Dr. Wong's recommendation, which is to go see her neurologist 2 days after she was discharged.
Counsel, you've been giving us this in a capsule of an emergency room setting, and part of those facts are correct. But didn't this begin as an employment situation where there was concerns as to whether the person was under the possible influence of something, so they wanted her tested pursuant to the employment agreement.
All of that took place before Dr. Wong became involved in the case. Dr. Wong was in the emergency room caring for other patients in the emergency room setting. The patient was brought to him, so he had nothing to do with that.
I understand that, but the word emergency room puts us on a heightened show, which is a little different from the factual scenario when we add back this employment relationship that fostered this and created the testing situation in the first place, a request for testing.
Yes and no. Dr. Wong is in the emergency room, and there is a heightened sense from his perspective. Every time a patient walks into the emergency room from his perspective, it's a life or death situation. Anytime. I mean, this patient could have had a stroke. This patient had symptoms that were consistent with a stroke. She had a history of seizures at the workplace, and she was treating with a neurologist. So he did everything he should have done here, and there's no expert witness testimony saying that he didn't. There is a heightened sense of emergency here because this is an emergency room setting, and Dr. Wong, in terms of his day-to-day care of patients, treats emergencies. So, yes, I think there was a heightened sense from his perspective in terms of the care he provided to the patient. And again, there's no dispute here. They have no expert witness testimony saying that there was no implied consent here or that Dr. Wong did something that he should not have done in the case. This is an important case because what the district court did is essentially disregarded these cases that have require an expert witness testimony in a failure to obtain consent case.
Is it your point that Bronicki completely controls here?
Yes, that basically for an expert in an allegation where there is a failure to obtain a consent for a patient, yes, Bronicki would control here. It basically requires an expert testimony, the expert witness standard.
And you're here on a writ?
We are here on a writ, correct, Your
Honor. If it's true that Bronicki completely controls, what justifies us in taking a writ if this is settled law and it's just an error by the district court in misreading Bronicki?
I'm sorry, what justifies?
I'm sorry, my microphone. We're here on a writ. Your position is that Bronicki decides this case and the district court erred in not following Bronicki. If that's true, why should we take this case on a writ? We're just correcting error. Is that something that is appropriate for writ relief?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a case where there's no factual dispute. All the facts are basically agreed upon. This is a case where, the error is this is an issue of importance in terms of the legal questions, too, as far as whether a medical battery requires expert witness testimony as well. So on both of those issues,
well, yes. Well, but on that question, you can imagine a lot of factual scenarios. For example, if a doctor sexually molests his patient while she's under anesthesia, there's no consent in the world that's going to validate that, and that would seemingly not require an expert affidavit. Would you grant me that?
That would be something outside the doctor-patient relationship.
Sure.
And that would be a situation unlike here, where everything that's alleged is that the doctor provided medical care and only provided medical care, and that the fact of the medical care that was provided is alleged to have been without consent. It's
and
not
is that any different from Bronicki?
Is that anything? Yes. The difference in Bronicki is a slight difference in that the allegation was that the doctor didn't disclose the additional risks from the procedure, that it was a lack of informed consent from the procedure. So it's slightly different on terms of the facts. But the issue is still the same. Did the doctor act reasonably in presenting the risks to the patient and in getting the patient's consent for the procedure moving forward? So they are similar but not exactly the same on the facts.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
You're going to proceed? All right.
May it please the Court, Jonka Whitehead for Dr. Bangalore. While Dr. Bangalore agrees with the legal position that Dr. Wong's counsel has just stated and argued for you, the facts as they apply to Dr. Bangalore are quite different. Dr. Bangalore merely participated in a telephonic consult. He was not in the ER that day. He did not speak to Ms. Williams. He did not touch Ms. Williams. He received a telephone call from the ER that his patient, that he had an ongoing treating relationship with for 2 years prior, was having a neurologic issue, something that he specifically treated her for. And prior in their relationship, he had expressed consent. She had signed a consent form the very first time she visited him in the office, and the consent form was meant to be broad. It was meant to cover the treatment that he would provide in the subsequent visits, and if ever called by the ER, that he could consult with the ER physician, that he could recommend lab tests that could potentially save her life. We want this continuity of care. We want this to happen. We want neurologists who are treating a patient to respond to a call from the ER. Now, I believe that it needs to be discussed that there is a big difference in this case between common law battery and the intentional touching that occurs in a medical treatment setting. Plaintiffs have pled common law battery. They argued before the district court common law battery. There are two significant differences. One is intent. As I stated, nearly every touching that occurs in a medical treatment setting is going to be intentional. As this court held many years ago in the Rocky Mountain Produce Trucking Company, the difference between negligence is that the harm is unintentional. With battery, the harm is intended. In this case, both physicians intended to help Ms. Williams. They believed they were providing her medical care that she needed in an emergency room setting. Dr. Bangalore ordered these tests because she had prior issues with seizures and was demonstrating altered mental status. As counsel for Dr. Wong stated, this is an emergent situation. This could be a stroke. We don't know what is going on until we run these tests and we provide this treatment. The second major difference between common law battery and the intentional touching in a medical setting is consent. In Bernanke, or I'm probably mispronouncing it, it states that consent may be implied or expressed. Here, for Dr. Bangalore, he had signed express consent to be able to treat her for 2 years. And in fact, she followed up 2 days following this incident, and he went over the tests that he ordered in the emergency room department. So he had the express consent. When he picked up that phone and spoke to Dr. Wong, he believed he had express consent to not only provide this medical information to Dr. Wong, but also to order these lab tests. Second, there was implied consent here. When Dr. Bangalore suggested or ordered that these lab tests be performed in order to determine whether she was over-medicated, and the lab tech came into the room and said, we are going to draw blood, and she put her arm out to receive the blood draw, that is implied consent. Now, I understood that there was an employment situation that had occurred prior to her coming into the ER. But for Dr. Bangalore, who received this phone call from the ER, he had no idea. In his mind, he had express written consent, and he had implied consent. And his intent was to help her, to provide medical care pursuant to their ongoing treatment relationship.
Has this case done anything in the district court since the petition for writ relief was filed?
No. The case was stayed. The next step would have been trial. So it has been stayed.
So the statutory time limit on bringing a Med-Mal case to trial has been disrupted by this proceeding?
Yes. If she was going to refile, then the statute of limitations has lapsed. Although I believe that it would be stayed due to the writ.
The complaint was filed in 2012?
I believe so. The issue you brought up with regard to why this is a writ petition and why this is important is significant for doctors like Dr. Bangalore. This could have a significant chilling effect. If every time Dr. Bangalore picks up the phone from an ER physician to talk about one of his own patients, he could get sued for battery, common law battery. And keep in mind, she was helped. The diagnosis was correct. So in the end, they did provide care to her that she needed. And yet, because in her mind, something she never voiced, she lacked consent, now they can claim battery? This is really not the public policy that we want to create for our physicians. And I agree that if the court is thinking, what would the reasonable physician do to ensure consent? If that's what the analysis is, then that requires expert testimony. Thank you, Justices.
Good morning, Your Honors. First of all, Chapter 41A doesn't apply because this is not a Med-Mal case. This has absolutely nothing to do with negligence. And when you look at this case, I want to take you all the way back. because I think Justice Cardoza, in a case back in 1914, said it best, every human being of adult years and sound mind has the right to determine what shall be done with his own body. That's what this case is about. You're not allowed to touch me unless I give you permission. And when I am forcibly brought somewhere, my presence is not implied consent, be it my supervisor dragging me down under threat of termination and standing guard over me my entire time in the ER, which they like to forget, but that happened. So she never had the opportunity to say anything because that floor supervisor stood there. Now, could this have all been avoided had the doctors honored the doctor-patient privilege, honored medical privacy? Of course. Then there would have been a closed door, and she would have had that opportunity. But that opportunity was never afforded her because that floor nurse stood guard, just like happens every single day when law enforcement takes people in handcuffs to get medical cleared. It is the doctor's responsibility to make sure they have permission. It's a very basic tenet that dates back to the early 1900s. When you look at...
But under Bronicky, wouldn't it be fair to say there should be an expert affidavit as to what an ER room doc is supposed to do when a person is presented? I mean, there are instances where an employer escorting an employee to the ER is benign entirely and indeed helpful. They're concerned their employee is staggering, she's... I mean, to me, what's the appropriate response on an ER? They also have the doctor's oath of trying to help people, and it may be that this patient needed immediate attention. Her employer brought her there. Why wouldn't that require an affidavit saying medical standard would dictate that you get the patient's oral written consent outside the presence of her employer, notwithstanding the reports of stroke-like?
Your Honor, because there is a huge distinction between emergency medical care, which did not apply here. There were no facts to ever indicate, nor was it ever pled, that this was a medical emergency where we're rushing and worrying about cardiac arrest or stroke or anything else. None of those emergencies occurred. This was not treated as an emergency. And we're not talking about an emergency situation. And Bronicky doesn't apply because Bronicky was a negligence. And there's a big distinction between implied consent, where I agree you can touch me, but you didn't give me all the information, so I didn't make an informed decision. Yes, I agree, that's negligence. And as a matter of fact, every court across the country says implied consent, where we're going to the extent of the information the doctor provided the patient, is a negligence standard, expert affidavit, no argument. But we're not there, because we're at the threshold question of, did you have a right to touch me in the first place? Basic battery. And every single court across the country, including the United States Supreme Court, says, no, there is medical battery, and if you touch a patient without permission, it's battery. It's not malpractice. It has nothing to do with negligence. It is simple, common law battery.
So in every situation, when you're rushed off to an emergency room and there's no paperwork done and the consent forms aren't filled out, you're potentially facing a battery if you're a doctor in an emergency room.
No, I'm not talking about life and death, and there's a huge difference between life and death. And when you plead life and death and somebody's unconscious, they can't
consent.
Maybe
it's not life and death. There's many instances that you go into an emergency room that isn't life and death, and you're going to get its condition checked out that perhaps could be argued here.
And, Your Honor, there is a big difference between a doctor responding to an emergency, and a doctor, as Dr. Wang says in his pleadings, it's not my responsibility to ask for consent. I'm sorry, but every human being who decides I'm going to touch somebody, whether I want to shake your hand or whether I want to stick a needle in your arm, I better have your permission to do it.
Because basic human nature. Wasn't there an implied consent in this case, in the sense that she certainly didn't object?
The district court said no. The district court says there's an issue of fact. That's all the district court said. Because this is a motion for summary judgment that was denied.
Correct. And we're here to determine whether or not the district court erred.
And quite frankly, Your Honor, under the Supreme Court rules, we shouldn't be here. The reality is, because this is an interlocutory appeal, denial of summary judgment. And writs don't apply, because when you look at the writ of prohibition, the district court didn't exceed its authority by denying summary judgment and saying, I find an issue of fact, and the district court didn't abuse its discretion in finding that there's an issue of fact. Because the district court looked at all the facts and said, you know what? I can't say as a matter of law that implied consent is present.
Where in the order did the court describe the question of fact?
The district court right out said there's an issue of fact with regard to consent.
That's all it said.
That's what it said. There's an issue of fact for consent.
And isn't the issue of consent one that involves negligence?
No, it does not. There is no issue of negligence here. It is the threshold. And when you look at the long series of cases, and there is a long series of them, many I cited. You can also look at Hobbs versus Grant out of California, 8 California 3rd, in 1972. The court stated in California, however, expert opinions as to community standard is not required in a battery count in which the patient must merely prove failure to give consent and mere touching absent consent. That question, that threshold question, can I touch the person, is the distinction between a battery and a medical malpractice claim. And going down to the trial that is going on below for sexual battery, yeah, it is a battery. It's not a med mal case. And if you reverse this decision, you are saying that there is no battery in this state. And that can't happen. Because
I think there's an arguable distinction that in the sexual touching arena, that's outside the scope of the medical relationship. And I appreciate that we're kind of reaching here, but in this arena where a doctor renders emergency room care to someone who's brought in and who is conscious and makes no objection, that to me is in the rendering care arguably of Chapter 41A definition of medical malpractice. Why isn't it?
Because, Your Honor, you also have to look at the totality and the circumstances. You have somebody who's brought down to the emergency room. Okay, we're talking August of 2011. Ms. Williams is a black female. She was 51 years of age at the time, and she's at the top of the union pay scale. If she gets fired, she's not getting another job. She has one child in college and one about to go to college. And at the meeting prior to being taken down to the HR, she is told, not only by human resources, but she is told by her union rep, cooperate or be fired.
But that's what the contract says.
That's right. So she has to cooperate or be fired. And now, the entire time, the floor supervisor is standing there making sure she cooperates, because if she doesn't, she's going to be fired. And while this in the employment context doesn't happen every day, I'll tell you what happens every day. When law enforcement takes somebody in handcuffs to the emergency room, is that person there voluntarily? No, they're not. They are forcibly taken there. And are they free when that person is standing guard over them to talk freely? No, they're not. I don't care whether it's your supervisor waiting to fire you or the policeman who you just got in a fight with. You're not going to open your mouth because you're afraid. Does that doctor, and have that doctor, honor doctor-patient privilege, honor medical privacy, shut the door, kick the supervisor out, and asked, just asked her the simple question of, why are you here? Or, do you want medical treatment? But none of that happened. Because Dr. Wang didn't think he needed, it wasn't his job to get consent. And they don't think medical privacy has to be honored. And that, by the way, will be another question coming before the court, because I don't file interlocutory appeals, but the district court said it was a rule of evidence. So we'll be back up.
Is there any distinction between Dr. Wang and Dr. Bangalore?
The distinction and why they say, first of all, the consent form that Dr. Bangalore relies on, if you read it by its plain language, it's not valid. By its own terms and language, it's not valid, which is the district court already threw that out. But what's really sad is Dr. Bangalore, in his deposition, admitted he knew Ms. Williams worked at the hospital. He knew she was an employee there. And so, knowing that you should protect your patient's privacy from their employer, you would think he would have bothered to ask for a consent form. But he had testified in his deposition he never asked for consent. But what's really interesting, and we dismissed Dr. Gardner from this claim, who is the radiologist who read the CAT scan, we dismissed her because here's a doctor who had no connection with Ms. Williams, performed no invasive procedures, but she required the hospital to send her an arguably invalid consent form because it was a pregnancy form. But when you look at the pregnancy form on the bottom in 6-point font, it gives them permission to send it out. She at least made some attempt to obtain consent. Is it unreasonable to expect a doctor to get basic consent before they touch somebody outside of a medical emergency? Every single court in this country says yes.
How do we as lay people know what constitutes a medical emergency without an affidavit from somebody expert in ER room protocols?
The medical records speak for themselves, Your Honor. If you have a crash cart coming in and you have multiple doctors coming in, you're calling the trauma team, yes, I think you have a medical emergency. But when somebody is sitting around the ER for hours at a time with nobody even checking on them and not doing anything, you don't have a medical emergency. And there was no issue that there was no medical emergency. They admitted in their pleadings that this was not a medical emergency. That's not the issue. The issue before this court is whether in the state of Nevada, a doctor, barring an emergency, is required to have consent before they touch a patient. Okay? Every single state in this country says yes. The U.S. Supreme Court, in interpreting federal law, recently in Levitt versus U.S., which came out in March of 2013 at 133 Supreme Court 1224, said, yeah, even for the federal government, there's a difference between battery, you touched me without asking permission, and medical malpractice. We would be the only state to grant a doctor the ability to touch a patient without consent. And the last time in history that ever happened was World War II, Nazi Germany, Dr. Mengele. He was the last doctor who was allowed to touch patients without consent. Thank you.
Okay. Counsel.
Very briefly. In terms of exercising discretion on the writ, Smith versus 8th Judicial District, 111, Nevada, 1343, this court will exercise discretion on petitions where there's no factual disputes existing, and pursuant to clear authority under a statute or rule, the district court is obligated to dismiss an action. The district court was obligated to dismiss this action.
Didn't the district court indicate there were factual disputes?
On consent, because he applied the layperson standard, because he didn't require expert testimony on an informed consent case, like this case. This case is clear Nevada law. Bronicki versus Rutherford, Smith versus Cotter, the four cases, all clearly require expert witness testimony for a consent
case. And he viewed this as an intentional tort.
I'm sorry?
He viewed this as an intentional tort.
Right, and again, disregarding the Smith versus Cotter case, which says that basically obtaining consent is a negligence issue. It's an alleged breach of duty. There's nothing intentional here. There was never any intent to harm the patient. There's no evidence the patient was even harmed in this case. All she did was receive medical care. Dr. Wong has a right to raise as a defense to this claim that he complied with the standard of care. It's established as a matter of law because there's no expert witness testimony contradicting it that he acted as a reasonably prudent physician would in this case. I have never seen a case in Nevada or anywhere in the country where a physician can act as a reasonably prudent physician under a given set of circumstances and still be liable to a patient for damages. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. The case will stand submitted. We thank counsel for their briefs and their arguments today. We'll be in recess until